You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Okay, here we are. Is this, we are live. Okay. Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Just a little bit late, maybe 27 minutes, but we're here, and I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Carla Fox back to a very short show. Carla has spent many years as a shamanic practitioner in the Peruvian traditions. She has trained other practitioners in the United States and abroad. In March 2012, she discovered a new protocol through the Monroe Institute, which she calls quantum sphere healing. It has become the main healing modality that she uses with her clients. Carla's focus of service has now shifted into the quantum realm, higher dimensions, at www.quantumstargate.com and her wonderful blog at www.thecarlafox.com. So let's welcome Carla back to the show now. Hi, Carla. How finally are you?
Well, I'm good, Lance. Unfortunately,
you know, I don't hope you don't mind me starting out there.
No, sure, that's fine.
Because, you know, this is a country, United States is a land of denial, and death is one of those things that we've kind of wallpapered over because we think that if we do that and don't see it, that we won't have to look at the wall beneath it.
Yeah.
But eventually that moment comes and nobody seems to be ready for it. And there are practitioners who go into various places in veterans' homes and do before-death work to prepare the individuals for crossing over. And apparently there's a little bit more to it than that. There's a lot of processing that could go on, and you're going to be helping people with that process, are you not?
Well, my focus is on the soul of the person after they have passed over.
Ah, good.
Yeah, I'm not training people to go into facilities the way you've described and, work with. Not that they couldn't, okay?
Right.
But there are so many people that have passed over and are stuck.
Mm.
You know, I know from my shamanic training, this is part of what we learned with the shamanic training, death rites, which actually did include working with them, helping them drop baggage before they actually passed over, and then the shaman's job is to kind of travel with them and make sure they end up where they're supposed to be. Yeah, I have not had the opportunity to work with someone who's getting ready to pass over.
Oh.
So I don't train that part to people. You know, I tell the students in this class, if they ever have that opportunity, for example, if it's a parent or someone in hospice, they can certainly call me and I'll walk them through the process.
Oh, good.
But what I'm training people to do is through the shamanic journey process to track and find a loved one that has already passed. See where they ended up. Were they earthbound? Did they go to the light? Where are they stuck? Where are they suffering? And to bring them back, clear that baggage they took with them, and then launch them to a higher level. And so for the average student, they have much more of an opportunity to do that process than actually assist someone while they're dying. Even if it is a parent, doesn't mean the practitioner would have the opportunity to be right there, you know, when the moment happened. And so that's part of the class. I'm teaching shamanic journey work, but also, importantly, mapping the pathway for everyone attending, the pathway that they should be taking once they're out of the body. Because if you don't know the map, it's hard to take the journey.
Right.
And so that's part of the course, too. But, you know, getting back to the deceased, I run into a lot of this. If a person died badly, if it was sudden, if there was a murder, suicide, perhaps long-standing disease, or if the person was on morphine at the end.
Ooh.
That's becoming more and more of a problem.
Wow.
And so that pretty much guarantees that they do not go to the light.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Oh, the morphine especially, because morphine slows down your vibration. You need that escape velocity. You need enough vigor and zip when you pass over to propel yourself out as far as you can.
Oh.
And if a person is on morphine, they just can't. In fact, I've run into cases where the person lingered even longer in the body because of the morphine.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's a major problem.
Do you think that that's well known in the circles that would be concerned about these things?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
This is
something that we
experience.
Need to know.
Well, you know, the ideal is when we get to that point that none of us, no one listening to the show or people who are on a spiritual path, that none of us end up on morphine.
Right, right.
I like to think that there is something that could be developed that is doesn't have that vibration-lowering capacity that the morphine does. You know, maybe something herbal, maybe something in the realm of medical marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
But the medical establishment doesn't know about this. So it's a big problem.
Huh.
Yeah. And so for most of the students coming to the class, they have either one or two parents who are still alive.
Uh-huh.
And that is a major service to those who pass over to be able to be attended to in this way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, whether they're in morphine or not or whatever, you know, whatever happens at the end.
And also, didn't you say that the class would cover orientation about where you are? Like, in other words, when you wake up and find yourself dead.
Yes.
you know, yes. Pretty much what realm you're in, and you know how to navigate and look around. And,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Because that seems pretty important.
That's the map, and the key is to be conscious
yeah.
as best as you can when you leave your body.
Mm-hmm,
now, we might
mm-hmm.
start to find situations where people at will can leave their body and just go. I know it's happened in the past, but life has become so complicated and so difficult that, and of course, with people living longer and more cancer and more other diseases, you know, that's a worthy goal, to maintain consciousness at the end, which
mm-hmm.
means we have to be at the top of our game when
wow.
it comes time to go.
And it doesn't seem that most people are at the top of their game when they go.
No, they're not.
If anything, they're far from it.
Yeah.
So you know, does that mean that there are a lot of people hanging out in the astral plane?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then aren't there other entities as well that hang out on the astral plane?
There are, although with all the people I've done death rites on, in other words, people who have already passed, I have really not run into any souls being hassled by an entity. No,
okay.
I have not run into that. That seems to happen more for the people who do out-of-body experiences.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, they pass through that lower fourth dimension astral plane.
Uh-huh.
And if they've got issues or baggage, they can easily attract to them an entity that's looking to bother them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I have not run into it as far as the death issue. No. But also, another thing we're going to work with in class are earthbound spirits, ghosts, haunted properties.
Oh, yeah.
Because those are all people who have passed over and are stuck in a certain way, in a place, attached to a person. And so the people coming to the class will learn how to send those beings to the light. So I consider this great service work.
Oh,
dealing
yeah.
with those who pass over and who are stuck. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, the person that's stuck probably has no conception of time.
Right. It's like they're on a time loop.
Yeah.
I did a demo for the class, for this class I did in April. A friend of mine, her partner had died, and I used him as a demo. and he had been debilitated and in bed for quite a while, a month to 6 weeks, I would say, and at the end couldn't eat, you know, could barely speak. And so when I tracked him, he not only did not go to the light, but from his perspective, he was still in bed, sleeping.
Oh.
I mean, talk about being stuck.
No kidding.
And who knows how long it would have taken for him to kind of wake up. The flow naturally is, you know, upwards, but it can take years and years and years.
Wow.
James von Prague said it's about 80 years between lifetimes.
Really?
Most of that is spent lingering and suffering and trying to drop the baggage that the person took with them.
Oh, gee. That seems like a big waste of time.
Oh, well, yeah. And keeping in mind, too, that with this process, we cannot get anyone off of the wheel of reincarnation. The best we can do is get them back onto the wheel quicker, get them back here, and give them the opportunity to take another go at it.
Oh, gee, that sounds like a kind of a hopeless situation then.
Well, but we're not in charge of that person.
Oh, right,
you know,
right.
They've created the circumstance that they're in. We're just helping them along and giving them the opportunity to try it again. You know, getting off the wheel of reincarnation is totally a matter of the person's own vibrational level, level of clarity, level of evolution, and their soul's choice. And nobody can do that for anybody else.
Right, right.
But we can assist them along the way, you know, get them moving along and give them an opportunity to come back sooner and take another go at it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Now, can people be held in recurring loops of incarnations?
Say that again. Can they be what? Helped?
Can they be forced, shall we say, to continue in loops of incarnations?
Well, aren't we all?
I would think so. I don't know why you're here, but it does often seem that a lot of people are here after many times of trying to leave, and it's an old story, and it's just getting older.
Yeah, but there are tricks to it, and this is part of the class that I'll be teaching. There are ways to make sure you do not enter that wheel once you pass over. You know, I can give out the information, but then the person's got to live their life in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the flip side, Lance, our higher self and our soul pretty much plan this all out.
Okay.
Before we're born, and it's the old free choice business. You know, do we have that much free choice at the end, or has our exit been pre-planned?
Just
going along with the plan.
Yes. Or is it a fake plan and we're being faked out?
You know, we're not victims. I do not believe in that at all.
No? Okay, good.
That's but refreshing. Again, a higher part of us is, let's say, maybe pulling the strings.
Oh, okay.
And so, in one respect, there's a lot of grace in kind of going with the flow of our lives, knowing that, you know, to fight against things and overwork choices just waste time and energy.
Right, right, right.
And so a person knows when they're in their flow, when things come easier, when life is easier, when we deal with issues easier, and it's one foot in front of the next, and we're kind of in that pipeline. Then you know you're kind of following the plan that your higher self has set out for you.
Right, and things are more in synchronicity, it seems.
Oh, yes, yes. And things fall into place, and we move from one step to the next a lot easier. Then we know we're kind of following the plan that's been laid out for us before we were born.
Yes, especially when there are not a lot of glitches.
Yeah, well, yes, it's not a perfect system, that's for sure. Like we found out tonight, right?
Yes, we found out. Sometimes you just need to get a new soundboard.
Oh, okay. So that's the class. The information is on my website, and I'm running it twice in September, the 7th through the 9th and the 28th through the 30th.
Well, it sounds wonderful. I mean, anybody that's alive should be interested in something like that, especially coming from you.
Anybody who's alive. Yes. Well, they're going to learn how to pendulum test. They're going to learn how to use a pendulum to see if a person still has their chakras.
Oh, all right.
And the last thing we're going to do Sunday afternoon is a launching.
Oh.
I mean, it's packed with all kinds of good stuff.
Yes, well, it sounds like it's going to be fabulous.
Yeah, and I've also been working with clients in New Zealand. They want to bring me over there to teach the class
next
year. Yeah, so we'll see if we can arrange that, and then I would let my Australian people know. But the launching, you know, that's where I get a lot of my juicy information.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who come to class will learn how to do that, too.
Wow, that's incredible.
And we've talked about that before. You know, you get together with a group and in a circle around one person. Everyone expands their energy, their core essence, and then in unison, we kind of grab the energy bubble of the person who's in the center and fling it out into space as far as we can.
Wow.
And then we wait, and they ask for a certain number of minutes, and they have an intent, and they go out and get what they get. And so we get a lot of advanced information that way.
Oh, yeah. Well, your blog is chock full of it. I'm always so fascinated to read about your journeys and your the people who are with you. Their journeys are also very interesting.
Yes, yeah. And so all the goodies that I get, I write up in the blog.
Oh, yeah. I'm really glad you do, because there aren't that many people that are documenting those journeys. And I think we need to kind of hear those things to you know, we can't all just do that. We can't all just launch, so we need somebody to show us, like a shaman, who can explain what's going on.
Right. And believe me, it's so complicated up there and so much stuff going on.
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, oh my goodness.
Do we have an
actually,
hour?
actually what I was going to, the other bit I was going to talk about tonight is all the work I've been doing with the Pleiades.
Oh, yes. Let's get to that.
Well, you might want to schedule a whole new show for that. But so I've been investigating stargates, which we routinely run into during the launching.
Oh.
When I was down in Mexico in January on a trip with Hugh Newman, Megalithomania, and we were at Palenque, and I had made contact with Lord Pakal the last time I was down in Palenque in 2010. And I positioned myself in front of the Temple of Inscriptions, where his burial is still there.
Uh-huh.
Called him in, and boom, he opens the stargate right up in front of my face.
Whoa.
And I go through, and I'm at the Pleiades.
Oh, my God.
And we had a free day, and my roommate and I went and did, you know, that was our second day at Palenque. And there were very few people there, which was nice. So I just kind of got a taste of that. But then I've been reading Daniela Fenton's book called Hybrid Humans.
Oh.
And she said that Lord Pakal was an alien-human hybrid from the Pleiades.
Uh-huh.
So he opened up that stargate for me to see, you know, his home world. I have a past life there. You know, he had to this day, had the longest reign of anyone in the Americas. He ruled for 68 years.
Well, that's a long time.
Long, long time. And I do believe I studied with him in that lifetime, towards the end. I was a child, and he was towards the end of his lifetime.
Wow.
And George Kavassalis, I believe, had something to do with that business down there, too.
Oh.
Lord Pakal and the Pleiades, yes.
Huh.
And Palenque. So I've been investigating stargates and then how the Pleiadians seeded life on this planet and my part in all of that. I don't feel that I was a Pleiadian, but was probably on the Galactic Council. mm-hmm. that decided to seed life on this planet.
Mm.
So I, and of course what I'm describing is several launches and some meditations and gathering information in different ways, but I saw how they were able to create a form for physicality,
mm-hmm.
and then beings from the constellation Lyra provided mm-hmm. the consciousness,
okay.
And how they injected that those first organisms onto planet Earth.
Wow.
And they did it by opening up a stargate.
Interesting.
And sending a vessel that looked like a spinning top. And then the pointy, longer pointy end of the top just kind of squirted all the patterning all over around the Earth.
Huh. And
then the consciousness came and embodied. So we're talking about single-cell organisms.
Okay.
That started to terraform, create oxygen, create an atmosphere. And we're talking about millions or if not billions of years here.
Wow.
So that's kind of what I've been working on since January.
Well, that certainly is interesting.
You got the encapsulated version right there, Lance,
right.
Because we're short on time.
Right, I know.
Yeah, but it was interesting. I asked, why planet Earth? And they chose Earth because it was in the right place and was at the right stage of formulation
uh-huh.
when the council created the plan to create a library.
A living library.
Living library with life forms from all over the galaxy. Yeah. Yeah. So
well,
it wasn't
quite a zoo here.
Well, it certainly is. And yeah, Earth just happened to be right at that stage where this could be done. And clearly if there were advanced civilizations that were able to seed life on Earth, who knows how many billions of years we're talking about here. And then, of course, from then on, there's been many ET races, reptilians in particular, mucking with the works here on the planet,
uh-huh.
creation of the human form. The Pleiadians came back several times. So it's quite a work of, everything combined onto one planet here.
I've also heard that the Pleiadians used to use the moon as their seeding device, that they used to travel throughout the galaxy and that they were well-loved and known, and that they used the moon as a way of seeding planets as they traveled through, and that there was a warp with, I can't remember if it was...
with reptilians, probably.
With reptilians,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they completely decimated the interior and got the Pleiadians out of there, and they basically stripped it.
Yeah. That came along a lot later than where I kind of entered the scene here. But yeah, I do believe that is valid because, of course, after the Earth is terraformed, so you've got your single-cell organisms, you're getting some oxygen, some water's showing up, amoebas, bacteria, that kind of thing, then the more advanced life forms had to be brought in here. And I do believe they were brought in intact from other places,
okay.
like you're describing, whereas the first layer of what went on, which is where I gravitated to, that was actually created here from scratch, pretty much.
Mm.
Brought here and kind of put together, and then just incubating and cooking and of course, billions of years of that going on.
Right. Deeper.
What do they say? The Earth is 4.5 billion years old?
Yes.
So we're talking about a long time here. Yes.
Yes.
But other life forms, like animals, perhaps plants, I do think they were brought here intact and put onto the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the moon might have been one of the vehicles for that.
Ah, that is quite possible.
Yes.
And I wonder what it's a vehicle for now.
Oh, that's a whole nother show, Lance.
Yes, I know. I just had to throw that monkey wrench out there.
Oh, no, he did. Yes, but what I saw, the initial seeding of the single-cell organisms on the planet, there was no moon here at all.
Yes, I've heard that also, that there was a long period of time where the moon was not located here, that
right.
it was actually moved here intentionally.
Yes.
As a control device.
Yes. So that's a fairly, if you look at geologic time on the planet, the moon is a fairly recent addition,
right,
as far as I can tell.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
which leads to the topic of the moons that are around all the other planets in our solar system. What the heck are they all doing?
I sure have wondered that myself.
Yes.
And,
oh, my goodness.
They look remarkably manufactured to me.
Yeah. You know, there's a plan there. It doesn't look like this was all done by chance.
Oh, no.
Some kind of a plan, which means that they're, you know, spaced in a certain way and have certain chemical compositions and,
And disguises.
A lot of manipulation, yeah.
That they're disguised because they're not showing up as what they really are.
Okay, yeah.
So yes. There's a little bit of deception going on in the universe here, the local universe anyway.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We don't know quite yet what that is. Saturn's a very suspicious planet.
Yes.
It's quite a mystery with those rings.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things people could explore during a launching. Although I find, if you want to, but I find that people tend to go out even farther than our solar system.
Yeah, right, right. I would.
With,
as far out as I could get.
Yes. Yes.
Take
yeah.
away.
So we think life on Earth is complicated. My gosh, once you get off the planet and start investigating these various realms, it's infinite. It's always entertaining. There's always something new to find out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But I am finally getting to go to Turkey to see Göbekli Tepe in October.
Oh, how wonderful.
I signed up for that trip twice in 2016, and they canceled it for a variety of reasons. So it's going to be Megalithomania with Hugh Newman and Andrew Collins.
How wonderful.
And then we're doing a couple days in Lebanon to go see Baalbek and some other stuff. So I'm just so excited. And believe me, I'll be writing plenty of posts with pictures.
And will you take some of your wonderful pictures? Because I think most people don't realize that you actually are a professional photographer.
Well... Oh, you're so sweet, Lance. Not trained, but I do have the eye. And,
you do. You've got the eye.
I get my photos into our local calendar regularly, and I sell some of my work. And my photos have shown up for advertising for different organizations and all over the place. So I guess you could call that professional. Yes. Yeah.
Well, they really are quite beautiful and stunning, and like I said, you have an eye for it because the balance and the colors and everything about your pictures are just, there's a kind of an exquisite quality to them, and I really think that you do great work.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that on your trip.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I write the blog. It gives me an outlet also for the
Oh, it is such a treat. It really is a treat to read your blog.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, because we're 30 minutes late tonight, we are actually at the end of the hour. It seems like we could go on for another hour talking about all kinds of stuff.
So we'll
have to reschedule you for another show.
Yeah.
In the next available opening, and we'll try this again and see what happens the next time.
Okay.
We'll see where we launch to.
Oh, dear me. Well, undoubtedly, I'll have more tidbits to share.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
By the next time.
Absolutely, sure. And you'll be able to talk more about the Pleiadian trip.
Yeah, because that'd be great. You the encapsulated version. And there's so much more to it, Lance.
I know. And I'm sorry that to the listeners and for myself that we didn't get to hear that tonight, but we have that to look forward to.
Good.
And I just want to thank you for being here tonight, as short as it was. And we'll have you back. Like I said, I'll set that up in emails.
Okay.
And is there anything that you else that you want to announce before we sign off?
No, just go to my website, Quantum
Stargazing. Yes.
That's all on my website.
That's wonderful. That's a must-do. Well, Carla, thank you again for returning, and we will be talking to you again soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.